Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's October 3rd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll examine the issues behind Boulder's ballot question 2F and the annexation of CU South. And CityCast Denver looks at gun culture and the death of Isabella Thallis, who was fatally shot while walking her dog in the summer of 2020. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC News headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that, it's a public affair. Host Frank Dubofsky talks with Jim Martin, a former University of Colorado regent and a frequent contributor to the Boulder Daily Camera and Denver Post. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first these headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
The Boulder Police Department is investigating a shooting that occurred early Sunday morning in the University Hill neighborhood. BPD officers were responding to a disturbance call near the 1200 block Pennsylvania Avenue just before 1:30 a.m. Sunday when they received another call about shots fired in the immediate vicinity. Police say they believe three men exchanged gunfire. A police officer shot and wounded one of them. The BPD are still searching for the individuals that fled the scene and are asking members of the public to share photos or videos of the incident. The officer who shot one of the suspects has been placed on paid administrative leave. The entire executive board of CU's Center of the American West has resigned after the sudden firing of their beloved director. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
After Patty Limerick was suddenly discharged Friday, September 23rd, the entire executive board of the University of Colorado's Center of the American West left. More board members are feared to be leaving as resigned members share a feeling of loss and worry about the center's future. Limerick, as co-founder and director for 37 years, was abruptly let go by Glenn Krutz, CU's new director of arts and sciences. Krutz's media team told the Colorado Sun that the decision to let Limerick go was an appropriate decision to have change now and begin a new era. Those close to Limerick in the center of the American West fear that the loss of their director and center's co-founder will mark the end to the center, which has served as a leader of regional and cultural policy. According to their website, the center is committed to the civil, respectful, and problem-solving exploration of important and often contentious public issues. Sam Mamet, who joined the board in 2019, told the Colorado Sun that, "I'm fearful for that the loss of the center is a real possibility here." For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
The U.S. Department of Defense's Office of Naval Research will award a $10.9 million grant to two universities and five community colleges in the Denver metro area that will help students from underrepresented communities pursue careers in any engineering field. These colleges include the University of Colorado Boulder in Denver, the Community Colleges of Aurora in Denver, and eventually Front Range, Arapaho, and Red Rocks Community Colleges. The bulk of the $2.9 million in grants will finance student internships and stipends. The remaining will go to assist students in completing college-level math, science, and engineering courses before they go on to university. Denver's Office of Climate Action, Sustainability, and Resilience has opened a new round of e-bike rebate vouchers this morning. Claire Purnell reports.
E-bikes are bicycles with rechargeable pedal-assist motors that give riders a boost. The City and County of Denver debuted its e-bike rebate program earlier this year to incentivize drivers to transition to bike commutes. The program has been so successful that it hit its budget ceiling within weeks. Denver's climate office now makes a limited number of rebates available on the first Monday of the month, as unused vouchers approved earlier this year expire. As of September 30, 2022, 3,780 e-bike vouchers have been redeemed in Denver. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
Friday was National Day of Remembrance for Indian Boarding Schools, also known as Orange Shirt Day. The day commemorates children who were lost and abused in the Indian boarding school systems in the U.S. and Canada. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Clark Adamitis from KSUT and KSJD has the story.
It was the survivors of St. Joseph's Mission Residential School in Williams Lake, British Columbia, who started Orange Shirt Day in 2013. But the movement was inspired by Phyllis Webstad, whose favorite shirt as a child was an orange one given to her by her grandmother. When Webstead was enrolled in a boarding school in Canada, employees took her orange shirt away, and she never knew why. The website orangeshirtday.org shares these words from Phyllis. Quote, "The color orange has always reminded me of how my feelings didn't matter, how no one cared, and how I felt like I was worth nothing," unquote. More than 400 Native American boarding schools operated in the 1800s and 1900s. At the schools, children faced physical and sexual abuse. Today, people nationwide are wearing orange to honor those victims. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
Hundreds of people showed up to Colorado's state capitol on Sunday for a demonstration to protest the death of Mahsa Amani, the Iranian woman who morality police killed because, quote, her headscarf was too loose. This demonstration was one of many around the country and the world standing in solidarity for the rights of Iranian women and men around the world. Expect partly sunny weather with chances of rain mainly after 1 p.m. all throughout the Front Range today. The National Weather Service expects isolated stronger storms to possibly produce small soft hail, gusty winds, and a brief period of moderate to heavy rain. There is a limited threat of flash flooding in recent burn areas. In Boulder, a high of 69 and a low of 45. In Denver, a high of 72 and a low of 46. In Fort Collins, a high of 70 and a low of 44. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. An empty parcel of land in South Boulder, site of a former gravel mine, has been a bone of contention between the land's owners, plans to build on it, the city's need for flood mitigation, and neighbors who want the area to remain undeveloped. Last year, Boulder's City Council approved the annexation of the property known as CU South after many years of negotiations with CU Boulder. Now, voters will decide whether the deal will move forward. KGNU's Kiara DeMare has more.
CU South Boulder is a 308-acre parcel of land at the southernmost city limit of Boulder. The former gravel mine has been undeveloped for over 20 years now. The university bought the land in 1996, and it has been vacant ever since. As part of an annexation deal that would allow the university to build on the land and access city services, CU Boulder has agreed to develop a flood mitigation project on part of the land. But the annexation agreement has been met with staunch resistance from an organization known as Repeal CU South. They've successfully stalled the annexation over the years with petitions and ballot measures, and this year, the annexation is up for vote again. Margaret Lacombe is with Repeal CU South.
I've always been an environmentalist and a bird watcher, and so I've been coming here and watching wildlife for years, and I just can't bear to think of this plowed under and with a big stadium put on top of it, because it'll be gone forever, and that just kind of gets me in the heart.
Repeal CU South hosts regular nature walks to show other residents what may be lost if the city and university move forward with plans to create a flood mitigation zone, build housing units, and other university structures. Other permitted uses include the construction of a 3,000-person capacity sports stadium. CU Boulder's chief operating officer, Pat O'Rourke, says the university has committed to keep the development in line with city aesthetics and sustainable building codes.
We've agreed to a lot of the city's requirements, including the height limitation, and it's part of our overall sustainability commitments that we would be building to standards which would minimize environmental impact.
The current agreement is the end result of many years of negotiations between the university and the city. Derek Silva, the university's Associate Vice Chancellor for Business Strategy, has been at the table for many of those talks and says the school has agreed to meet Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED, building standards.
So that's the minimum standard for development, is we have to comply with LEED Gold, or they have to meet that LEED Gold standard. As well, for any wetlands that we might displace in the development area as we do our development along the next 20 or 30 years, we'll have to replace those wetlands at the, according to the city's wetland standards, which I believe is a ratio of about 3 to 1. So if we displace 1 acre, we have to restore 3 acres. And that 3 acres we envision to be in the open space area that will become open space on the property.
The main thing the city gets out of the deal is a flood mitigation project. It will also get custody of 119 acres for open space. But some opponents of the annexation agreement, like Steve Tooley, who lives near the CU South property, remain skeptical about the flood control design.
One of the problems is that I particularly am concerned about is the flood wall. They're going to put these big gravel trenches, which are sort of like big French drains on either side of the impermeable barrier, and then they're going to run pipes through. But the problem is that's never been tested, one, for groundwater. There are two instances they could come up with, which was getting water out of tailings ponds for mining, which means that you have a lot of water pressure coming down to push it through, and this groundwater is not going to have that level of pressure. Yeah. So basically what they're going to have to do is they're running pipes through that the groundwater can presumably go through. We don't know, but presumably it'll, you know, go through at low pressure. But to have a low pressure pipes there, then when you do have a flood and the water builds up, now the pressure is really high and it's going to blow out all of the gravel on the other side, right? And so now you've just destroyed it and you've built this big flood wall on top of it. What are you going to do, right? How are you going to fix it? They have no plans for that.
Boulder City Council approved the annexation agreement last year after lengthy negotiations. And ballot measure 2F is designed to be the final word on the back and forth between those who support and oppose the deal. Councilwoman Rachel Friend has an insider's view of the negotiations and says fears about floodwater diversion towards the highway and houses are unfounded.
It's illegal for us to design something that would do that, and it would not get permitted. So there will be overseeing agencies who will go over everything with a fine-tooth comb, and that we won't be allowed to build it if that's a possibility. The land was bought by CU in the mid-90s, and the city has been looking at it, you know, as a possible spot since the early 2000s. And then I would say after the 2013 floods is when we kicked into high gear, because we saw that the flash flooding presented here. And that's the kind of flooding that really quickly kills people, because it just sweeps you off your feet, sweeps cars away, things like that.
Boulder residents will be able to vote on ballot measure 2F, titled Repeal of Ordinance 8483, regarding the annexation of CU South on November 8th. A yes vote would repeal the annexation and put the brakes on the project, whereas a no vote would allow the flood mitigation and development plan to move forward. For KGNU, I'm Kiara DeMari.
On June 10th of 2020, Isabella Thallis was out for a walk in Denver's Ballpark neighborhood with her boyfriend, Darian Simon, and his dog, Rocco. Out of nowhere, Bella, as friends and family called her, was killed, and Darian was seriously injured. The couple was shot in broad daylight by a man they had never met. Peter Sagal is the longtime host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and a Chicago resident. But he was so compelled by the lack of coverage of this particular Denver shooting that he decided to write about it himself. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sat down with Sagal to discuss his recent report for The Atlantic, Killed for Walking a Dog, The Mundanity and Insanity of Gun Death in America.
Peter, what made you want to write a story about Bella Thallis?
That's actually one of the things I was trying to figure out in the course of writing it. I came across the news story. I wish I could remember how. I'm an undisciplined and person who keeps poor records, so I have no record of when I first saw the story. Obviously, it was soon after it happened in June of 2020, which means I, like everybody else, was probably stuck at home and do what I always do, stuck at home or not, and just look at the internet all day. It might have caught my eye because, well, there are a lot of obvious reasons. It's insane. I mean, even in, as you know, a world in which you can find stories of unjust and tragic shootings every day, it just struck me as being particularly insane, the circumstances of it. This young couple walking their dog, some guy takes exception to them and shoots them. That a lot had something to do with it. The fact that she was a young, attractive woman, which in our media culture usually means that you get more attention.
I had that same thought about this story. She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous. Her story was tragic. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of very cynical things that you could say. Maybe she would have gotten more attention if she vanished on a camping trip with her boyfriend or was on vacation in Aruba. Maybe it's because, you know, there wasn't any mystery, you know. There wasn't any, you know, this wasn't pre-made for a kind of true crime podcast. I mean, Serial's episode about this would last 4 minutes because they caught the guy that day and there was never any question of whether he had done it or not. The only question was whether he was going to be convicted of first degree murder, which, as I'm sure you know, he was by pure coincidence 2 days after my article came out. But to just try to finish answering your question, I don't know exactly why. And then, I mean, I saw it. The story when it happened, and I followed it. I would occasionally Google her name, you know, and say, well, what's going on? And there were developments in the case over the years, but it never like got noticed. I only found one article outside of the Denver press about it, and that was an article in the Washington Post that came out when it became known where the weapon came from. That is, it was the property of a Denver police sergeant. And that sort of gave it, I don't know what you want to call it, that extra dramatic twist that maybe drew some attention. Right now it's about gun culture and gun violence, but also it's about a police cover-up. But other than that, you know, nobody had ever heard of it. So to the extent that I was able to finally give it that attention, or her, I should say, that attention that I always felt she deserved, well, I feel like I've succeeded to some extent.
Absolutely. I mean, I knew the story sort of back and front from living here, like you said. It got a lot of local coverage, but there wasn't a deeper dig the way that you filled in the details of who Bella was.
Right. And that to me became weirdly important. And again, I had no idea who she was. I read the local news stories, and I should say, especially since I'm speaking to a Denver podcast, that yes, indeed, the local Denver press, most especially but not exclusively TV9, did a really good job of covering the story and the aftermath and what happened to the shooter and the legal's case. And not only that, but the ways in which Bella was memorialized by the Denver community, including the park that was made in her honor after a guy spontaneously put up a mural of Bella, and as well as the renovation and dedication of literally the spot where she was killed into a kind of park/memorial. But like you said, nobody else knew about it, at least outside the Denver community.
There's something else about the randomness of this murder, I think, that puts the focus back on us, the readers, the listeners who learn about Bella through stories like yours. And I wonder, like, did you ever start to think of yourself as a survivor of this kind of random gun violence? Like, you know, 40,000 Americans die every year, but not us. So, like, where does that leave us?
There's this passage in the book, The Right Stuff, by Tom Wolfe. And he's writing about the test pilots, the people who became the Gemini astronauts. The Mercury 7, excuse me, Mercury. And he's writing about the fact that a lot of them would die flying these planes because they were test pilots. It was extraordinarily dangerous. And whenever any one of them died, the other ones would come up with a way to explain it away. They'd say, well, he died because he made this mistake. Or he died because he forgot to check this. Or he died because he wasn't careful in this way. And it was always a way of putting up a kind of defensive wall so that they wouldn't have to confront the very high chances that they themselves would die. Because, oh, that guy made this mistake. I'm not going to make that mistake. Or that guy, you know, he flew in this kind of vehicle. I'm never going to fly in that kind of vehicle because I'm too smart to do that. And I think one of the ways that we deal with the absolute, you know, cataclysm of gun violence in this country is we kind of do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
We say, oh, you know, that person got shot because, well, I mean, where do you want to start? Because they were in a gang, because they lived in a neighborhood with gangs, because they had a gun in their home, because they had married some guy who was crazy. And you come up with an explanation, and by way of doing that, you exclude it from something that might happen to you or your loved ones, because you don't live in a neighborhood like that, and you're not in a gang, and you're not married to a crazy person or anything. There is no way you can talk yourself around this one. They didn't do anything wrong, is not even the right word. They didn't do anything to provoke them. They didn't do anything to endanger themselves. They were in like a lovely, you know, the neighborhood. This is not a bad neighborhood. This is a relatively new neighborhood in Denver. I've been there. You know what it's like. It's filled with all kinds of nice people. It's perfectly affluent. There's no, very little crime there. There was no reason to expect anything like this would ever happen. And it happened. And I very much wanted to take away any manner by which people could explain this away and not confront the truth, which is this could happen to anybody at any time.
So you're not a criminal justice reporter, right?
No.
Most folks will know you as I know you. You're an NPR host. You're a comedian. You're someone that looks at and examines the news as your job, but you know, it's a different take.
Fart jokes. It's mainly fart jokes, people smuggling animals in their pants, people being dumb.
But this is not your wheel, like not that it's not your
Ain't
wheelhouse.
It? No, it's not.
It's not something you would normally cover. And I just wonder how this experience of reporting on Bella and her life affects the way that you think about gun violence.
Well, I've actually always been really, really concerned about gun violence. I mean, I'll say to you what anybody with a job like mine will say to you, like, I love my job, and I think I provide a great service to the nation because everybody needs, you know, to laugh at fart jokes for an hour every week. And I'm proud of what we've done, and obviously it's been a very long run, and I could go on about it, but it's not the only thing I think about, you know?
Right.
And I have been concerned about the rising tide of gun violence in America for a very, very long time. Why? Because I live here, and because I can see it. And in addition to just the growing carnage, I've also seen with alarm and disbelief this modern gun culture grow up, in which people honestly believe that to infringe upon the right to own military-grade weapons, as many as you want, is somehow an infringement of human freedom. And the result of that is that people are getting massacred in the streets by the thousands every year. And it's just amazing to me that we just continue. And that's how I ended the article. And it was obviously a kind of an emotional thing because, of course, the shooting that happened here in Highland Park. And it's like, when are we just going to stop and look around and say people can't live like this anymore? No, as you know, no other modern advanced nation lives like this. The only other people who live like this are living in war zones.
Are you hopeful at all that we will finally say as a country and a culture that we can't live like this anymore?
I think, let me put it this way. There are a lot of people who are saying that. Mm. And in the end, you know, it really boils down to, I think, who are there more of? The people who believe that this is untenable and we can't live this way and we can't continue to lose people like Bella Thallis for no reason, versus the people who think somehow that's an acceptable price to pay for some abstract idea of freedom or sense of personal empowerment.
Peter Sagal, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you for caring.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Christian Garibay, Claire Purnell, Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon, Gere de Mare, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower and then a public affair with Frank Dubovsky. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.